Vinny, episode 472 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by First Down Scouting, delivering the most thorough scouting service available, uncovering the NFL stars of tomorrow. Follow them on the web at the number 1stdownscouting.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back into the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross talking NFL, specifically Week 5 with you and breaking it down. Last week for me, on all the games, 6-7, 0-3 on my big three games, 0-1 on my lock, unfortunately, for the year. 34-27 on all of the games, a sterling mark. But on the big three, 4-8, 1-3 on the lock picks. I'm actually 30-19 when you take my recommended plays out of it. I don't know how that happened. For Kyle, it's just been a grind of being in the positive every week. A 2-1 last week, bringing you to 11-6 on the year. A lot of consistency through the first 4 weeks, Kyle. You have been sterling all the way through on your recommended plays.
Thank you. We had Tampa Bay outright last week. That was a fun winner.
Yep.
Had Jacksonville been able to backdoor San Diego like I thought they were going to be able to?
Me too.
It would have been 3-0. Green Bay, a nice on-the-fly, live-on-the-show call last week.
Yes.
Made it the winning week at 2-1, yep. And like you said, we've been in the black all 4 weeks, kind of, you know, going 3-2 or 2-1. But, hey, I'll take it every week because at this point, you know, 11-6 is what, like 65% almost?
Yeah,
I mean, obviously
so.
12-6 would be 67. So
yes.
Well, I haven't taken a math class in about 15 years, so excuse me there. But, Ricky, I wanted to talk to you about a few things.
Okay.
Because if last week proved anything,
okay,
it's that even though, you know, it was another winning week for me, I'm not going to pat myself on the back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here, by the way, live with you this week, so you can see I'm not patting myself on the back.
Exactly.
It's Ricky that
O.
We don't really know as much as we think we do about the NFL on a week-to-week basis. The days of Team A just being so much better than Team B are over, with a few exceptions. Mm-hmm. Oakland and Jacksonville still stink.
Yep.
Denver and Seattle are still great. But other than those four teams, I mean, to me, the idea of laying points, either a lot of points at home or just some points on the road, not the way to go. And if there's one last Rubicon I have got to get you to cross, it is to stop taking these public road favorites as your big plays. I told you off air, I wept for you Sunday afternoon when I saw how lopsided the wagering was on Atlanta and New Orleans, your two road favorites that you had in true road favorite Ricky fashion.
Yes.
How those teams were just taking like three times the amount of wagers that the other side was. And I was like, oh boy, that's never a good sign.
Well,
Atlanta was taking even over 3-1. That line on Sunday moved from like -3 to -6. The book's favorite team on Sunday was Minnesota. And that was a huge help because they did not do well in the early games. Green Bay was a rare instance of me actually taking a public side.
Mm-hmm.
That one hurt the books. I believe Detroit hurt the books when they covered against the Jets. Tampa Bay was good for the books, obviously, and good for me. Good for us. You also.
Mm-hmm.
No, you liked Tampa Bay plus the points last week. You'd even texted me that you had called the early Mike Evans touchdown, and we got it.
Yeah, we did.
But, you know, it's tough. The more we think we know, the less we do. And I'll tell you this. I like this week's card a lot, so hopefully I do not blow I don't believe in momentum, so you know that. All the equity that I've built up through four
equity.
Weeks. Hopefully I do not blow that
here
all in 1 week, because I'm going with 6 recommendations this week.
All right, a chance to beef that up even more. I like to look on the optimistic side and say that. I would say that I'm going to go back to what we said over the summer, though, and give us some credit, because when we're picking records or approximate records, as the case may be, more so in your case, for teams this year, and we both said, we're picking more teams closer to 8-8. It doesn't generally play out that way. There's generally more separation away from that. And I said to you at the time, well, that may generally be the case, but that's the way I'm going to go. I can't shade my picks just to, you know, and you didn't do that either. You didn't shade your picks just because that's not the way it usually plays out. We had an instinct, is what I'm trying to say. This was going to be one of those years, and we were right, it looks like.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I've talked about not just this year, but previous years on the program when we pick records in the preseason,
mm-hmm.
is that roughly a third of the league will see its win total fluctuate by four games, either in the positive or negative.
Mm-hmm.
As I go through teams each and every week, I just don't see a lot of teams that are going to move that dramatically this year. There are a few still
right.
that I've got my eye on, including a couple of the obvious ones that we thought before the year.
Right.
But you're right. The clustering around 8-8 this year is going to be stronger than ever. There just are not the outliers. There's a couple candidates.
Mm.
Houston kind of comes to mind is a team that I think can whose record will be, I think, a lot better than its talent level.
Sure.
You know, they'll get to. I still think they can win a division in spite of Ryan Fitzpatrick being their quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't think there's a lot of teams like that this year. I almost think it's when we kind of see people jumping out of teams' bandwagon
mm-hmm.
after one good game, that's the best time to go against them the following.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And we've seen it thus far this year. To me, one of the bigger surprises through 4 weeks is we forecast for some teams some progression, and that has materialized in some cases. Houston, and they're the most evident example that comes to mind. Even Atlanta after the egg that they laid last week. But the regression for teams like Cincinnati, like Arizona, like Philadelphia, even after the dog last week, the Eagles are still 3-1. Carolina, we're starting to see it.
Yes.
But those are teams that coming into the year, even Kansas City, through 1 week, it was like, okay, check off that box. There go the Chiefs. And then the last 3 weeks have been an entirely different story for them. So
yeah, I was going to add them in.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, who would have thought that they would have looked as good as they did Monday night? And remember, they're only, you know, you brought up how they stunk in week one. And
mm-hmm.
after 2 weeks, I came on this program when they headed into that game against Miami. I was like, okay, if the Chiefs lose this one, it's going to be a real ugly 4 or 5 win year. Here we have it. They're now 2-2, and they almost, you know, they played the Broncos tough in their second of two losses.
Well,
so.
And you know what? And my thought on that is, and that's what it's going to be on some of the non-playoff teams, is they're still not a playoff team in my estimation.
No.
But they're an Andy Reid team. Even if they're 6-10, most of those losses are going to be close. The Chiefs will not be a stinko team. We can see that already.
There just aren't a lot of stinko teams,
right.
to use your language, and there just aren't a lot of teams that you can just depend on to win in convincing fashion week to week.
Right.
There just aren't. So,
right.
You know, looking forward to getting into this card this week. There are a lot of games that I like.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it'll be, a season-high 6 recommendations for
yes.
me this week. And then there, the rest of them, I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole.
Well, the first one is kind of a tough one. The Thursday nighter, the 2-2 Vikings at the 2-2 Packers at Lambeau Field, 8:25 Eastern time on CBS and the NFL Network. Nance Sims and Wolfson on the call. This is one where Green Bay is laying 8.5, open to 10.5. So people are clearly swayed by Minnesota and the way that they played last week here in this game against Atlanta. My sense is, and it's not a lot of sophistication in what I'm about to say, Thursday nighters, when you've looked at games where one team is clearly better than the other team, or even in the case of the Giants and the Redskins, one team didn't look that much better going in. They've been ugly games. And you're giving me a Thursday night game where I think there's been that distortion of they're coming in on only a couple of days, so I think it keeps it from being a true test. I think everybody would agree. You don't get a true test of what happens on Thursday nights.
No one likes these games.
Exactly. And it tends to exploit and amplify what's already there. Packers are a better team. Rookie quarterback with a bum ankle. Packers finally starting to get it into gear. Under other circumstances after Minnesota, what they did last week, I'd be inclined to say they might get the back door. But again, maybe that would be that famed overreaction to the last week again. So I'm going to act like last week didn't even happen and say I'll take Green Bay laying the 8.5.
Something I want to do this week,
mm-hmm.
the major reason that I showed up, because mm-hmm. I knew this would add to our time.
Okay.
And we would go over our 45-minute allotment that we usually
yes.
do every week. Is I wanted to take a look at how every team has done through 4 games. There's a few that I know have only played 3, so
mm-hmm.
in that instance, only be 3. How each team has measured up against the point spread so far.
Okay.
Case in point, Minnesota is 2-2. They have been a dog in all 4 games, though, so they've overachieved
mm-hmm.
a little bit by winning 2 of those games. One of them, as you referenced last week, an impressive 41-28 win over Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Green Bay, also 2-2. They've actually been a dog in 2 of their games. Ironically, the 2 they lost
mm-hmm.
at Seattle, at Detroit. So, you know, I'm kind of on board with Aaron Rodgers' whole relax
mm-hmm.
spiel that he went on his fan base. This was a team, if you remember in the preseason, Ricky, I said might start slow. Yeah. I'm not surprised that this team's 2-2 at all right now, Green Bay. They played at Seattle in the season opener.
Right.
And then had to play two division road games back-to-back, Detroit and Chicago. You'd figure they'd only split those.
Right.
So is Green Bay the better team? Yes. Minnesota, that was a shocker to me last week. We talked about the turmoil that team's going through. First-year head coach. Still no. Are we just going to forget about the whole Adrian Peterson saga?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by the way, why have they not cut him yet?
There's cap ramifications.
Is there? I thought I had read that it would do them a real wonder to get rid of him.
Well, maybe. I'm just going off of what I've really kind of heard. Oh. I haven't looked into it. Now that you've put me on the spot, I'll come back next week and I'll let
okay,
you know.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong. I've read things wrong before.
All right.
But I mean, when you look at the fact that they've, again, here's a team that's been a dog all 4 weeks and they've won twice.
Right.
What do you need Adrian Peterson for at this point?
The running game has been above its, they've been playing above their heads, though.
And that could be, that's why I cannot recommend Green Bay here.
Right.
Is because Green Bay's got the worst run defense in the league through four games. So Minnesota can maybe keep this close. They can run the ball effectively. I mean, I certainly do not think they're going to be able to run the ball for 241 yards like they did last week
against
Atlanta. But the quarterback situation at the same time gives me pause about taking the points with the Vikings. You have Bridgewater injured, may not go. If he doesn't, it obviously means Mr. Samantha Steele will be under center, and nobody wants it.
No.
So I'm passing on this game. This is one of the games I would not touch with a 10-foot pole.
Well, as you said, 176 yards per game that the Packers have given up on the ground. Having said that,
235 last week to Chicago in a win.
Again, here's the thing, though. There's nobody named Marshawn Lynch lining up for Minnesota. Nobody named Matt Forte lining up for Chicago. So some of that has to do with who they were up against. Reggie Bush, also Chris Ivory, Chris Johnson, all guys that I would take substantially above the guys that the Vikings have had. Although, again, Jerick McKinnon has played very well thus far, I have to say. But, yeah, my pick then is Green Bay, so you are staying away on that one. Moving to Sunday, first of the games to take a look at here, it is Atlanta at the New York Giants. This is a rematch of that, 22-0 playoff, just trouncing that the Falcons suffered a couple of years ago in the playoffs.
That's right.
And an embarrassing game here. The nadir of Atlanta's postseason performances in recent years, no question about that. Both teams, 2-2.
Kevin, it was the Terror Twilight?
Yes, it
keeping
was.
Keeping with their Pavement nickname?
Yes, it was. Exactly.
Underrated album, by the way.
Nice way of tying that together here. Kevin Burkhardt, John Lynch, and the delicious Pam Oliver on the call.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, in East Rutherford, 1 o'clock Eastern time, MetLife Stadium. And this is a game where the Giants have been laying about a pretty steady 4 points all week. This is one where I go back and forth on because, again, both teams, you know, hence their 2-2 records have been up and down. You say you don't believe in momentum. I say, though, in looking at this, the fact that the Giants' two wins have come in their last two games, I'm going to go with the case that there is something to be said for adjustments and finally starting to work out the kinks of this new offense. It's really been kind of night and day, the last two games versus the first two games. Atlanta, as we have noted, one of these teams that plays substantially worse on the road. Hello, last week when I was on them. So I will take the Giants laying 4 at home in this one.
That shocks me. Okay. I would love to make a case for Atlanta here. An Atlanta team that is 2-2. They were favored each of the last 2 weeks, split those games.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a dog the first 2 weeks and split those games. So they're kind of right on par.
Right.
And true to form, they've won the two home games, lost the two road games.
Right.
Don't you just get the feeling, Ricky, that this NFC South race, which is, I believe, is going to either New Orleans or Atlanta, will basically come down to which of those two teams can pull a couple road wins out of their hat?
You got to think so. Two dome teams.
I don't see both those teams making the playoffs. I only see one.
Right.
You know, both of them are going to win 6 or more home games. Can one of them get to 3 road wins? That'll be the key.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to recommend the Falcons here, but I can't on the road. You talked about how the Giants have sort of turned a corner offensively. They scored 28 points total the first two games. They've scored 75 points total the last two games.
Yep.
We questioned the Giants preseason, and they were a team that had a lot of funny stats that suggested that they could improve or they could decline. They had that horrible turnover ratio last year, which obviously suggests improvement this year because teams that have a bad turnover ratio 1 year, that tends to improve the next. They also had a horrible point differential last year thanks to getting blown out by good teams, and that usually tends to signify a regression the following year.
Right.
So I can't figure them out yet. They do have the feeling of San Diego last year,
mm-hmm.
a team that, remember, new offense, sucked the big one in the preseason, similar to the Giants this year, and then all of a sudden it clicked for Phillip Rivers. He got the new offense. It seems like Eli Manning, a fellow or 04 draft class.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Two of the big three from that class.
Is getting it too. So I'm going to pass here. Now, okay. It's funny, you talk about momentum. Mm-hmm. You know I'm the opposite way. Because the Giants have turned into two back-to-back quality performances, I almost tend to think that they're due to maybe take a step back.
Okay.
And in Atlanta, who, to me, one of the two awful losses we saw in the league last week, only topped by Pittsburgh, who we'll get to later on, would be inclined to be better. But Atlanta, I keep coming back to Atlanta on the road, outside, no thank you.
Exactly. Yeah. Both of these teams, to steal a term from the sport of kings, charismatic enigmas. I think we could agree that the Giants and the Falcons would both fit that.
Yeah. I mean, huge game for both teams.
Yes.
Really huge game for both teams, because I think the divisions they each play in are wide open and going to stay that way all year.
Yep, absolutely. And the next game is a battle of the heritage of the Colts. It's the 3-1 Ravens at the 2-2 Colts. 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Lucas Oil Stadium on CBS. Harlan and Gannon have the call in that one. This is a game where the Colts are laying a field goal in this one, had been 3.5. So clearly the odds makers are figuring more or less neutral, or more or less even on a neutral field. And this is one of the ones I really struggled with the most.
Oh, yeah.
I really, really just, I kept going back and forth on this, back and forth. There are just some things that I find that are kind of fluky in the case of Baltimore. Some things that I don't
think are sustainable.
Do you
believe in either of these teams?
No, not that much. I mean, I did pick Baltimore to be a wild card coming into the season. And, you know, they look more like, not just because they have a game lead on Indianapolis, which, by the way, again, this could be, and you and I both picked Houston to win the division in the AFC South. This could easily be a key game later in the season when it comes to wild card positioning.
Yep.
Should the Colts find themselves in that pile, as we think they might or will, then you're going to have that. For the Ravens, the rushing game with Forsett and Taliaferro, flukish, I think, at this point. Unsustainable. Steve Smith's pace, flukish and unsustainable.
Thank you.
Having said that, I'm a bitter Torrey Smith owner. Him being down and out is also flukish and unsustainable. So he's due to progress while you get some regression from the other forces here. But, again,
It's a fantasy tip, folks.
Yeah. But in terms of evaluating the offense, that's a net downward spike for Baltimore to say that Torrey Smith's going to go up, but a lot of the other factors are going to go down. You know, they're just kind of due on that one there. Neither team really seems that legit at running the football these days, although it's easier to run on Indianapolis right now than it is Baltimore by about 20 yards per game. Back and forth on this as I look at it. In the end, I'm going to bet on Andrew Luck. He hasn't really needed the running game to this point in time. This is the epitome of what a spread offense can do and the ability to put it in there to a lot of different guys. 9 different receivers caught the ball last week against Tennessee. That's how you do it without a legitimate running game. Andrew Luck versus Joe Flacco, give me Andrew Luck at home. But, it's a tough call. I'll say Colts. The Colts lay in the 3.
We're starting out with the games I don't like.
Okay.
But first, let's do this. Baltimore, so I was down on Baltimore more than you were. I did not have them making the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I thought they were lucky when they won the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were lucky to even be 8-8 last year. They're now 3-1. Kind of have a little egg on my face. I've gotten into some ill-fated arguments with random people about the Baltimore Ravens that I'd rather not get into at this point. But I want to point something out. Though they have not been a significant favorite in any of their games to this point, they have, in fact, been favored in all 4 of their games to this point. So being 3-1 should not be that impressive.
You're saying, hey, John Harbaugh, you want a cookie? You're supposed to be 3-1.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, the difference is, you know, pulling the rabbit out of the hat at Cleveland. And here's another thing. They've been at home in 3 of the 4 games where they play much better. Now, that said, I can't take Indianapolis because, you know, I don't like them as much either. I love Andrew Luck.
Right.
Don't love anything else. They are 2-2. Now, they've been favored each of the last 3 weeks. They lost outright in week 2 against the Eagles. They've since come back. And I'm not going to put a lot of stock into them blowing out Jacksonville or Tennessee, two teams that might be pretty bad at the end of the year. I mean, we talk how there aren't many stinko teams.
Right.
Those teams might be kind of – Jacksonville is stinko.
Yes.
Tennessee, when it's all said and done, they might be stinko too.
Right.
Interesting trend. All 4 Colts games have gone over, in case if you like to play totals. Just throwing that out there. Don't like either of these teams as much as the general public does, so I'm laying off. I I'd be inclined to agree with you, though, just because I can't see the Ravens going to 4-1.
Yeah.
But they could stay. It's going to be a tight game down to the wire. I'm glad that he's brought up Steve Smith, who I don't like, I don't think, personally. I don't know him, and I know if he would ever hear this podcast and hear me say it, he would probably want to fight me.
Probably.
But he has been the beneficiary of some real – I got in this argument with some guy throwing the counting stats, as I like to call them, at me. Oh, you don't think – because when he burned Joe Hayden 2 weeks ago, and I would like to stress burned Joe Hayden.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, you don't think a guy who's sixth in the league in receiving yards is good? I'm like, oh, boy. Oh, boy. We're going to go with the – I'm like, yes, and Allen Hurns was the top wide receiver in the NFL after the first half of the first game.
Yeah.
So
you got to love the morons who don't know enough to not argue sample size things with you in September.
Yes, exactly. He's played better than I've expected. But
sure.
Would you like to hear – I'm so glad you brought up Steve Smith because I would have forgotten totally about doing
this.
Well,
sell high on him fantasy-wise,
yes.
Clearly.
Would you like to hear the list of 35-plus-year-old receivers who have switched teams and had a 1,000-yard season?
Go ahead.
You ready for it?
Yeah.
You ready for it?
Yeah.
You're sitting down, right?
Yeah.
It's Jerry Rice.
Okay.
And that's the list.
What? No Alvin Harper or anybody?
No. There have only been – I believe there have only been 7 that have over 500 yards.
Okay.
So you talk about regression. I'm with you on Steve Smith, especially coming off an emotional high of last week against Carolina, where he caught a fluky tip ball, too.
Right.
He had another long touch. Didn't he have that long touchdown against Cincinnati?
Yeah.
That was also sort of kind of just a up-for-grabs bomb.
Right.
So I'm with you. I'm passing. That's a lot of – as always, I babble incoherently about a game I'm passing on. I'll say this, though. The Ravens probably are better than I thought they would be before the year. They will be in it until the end for a wild card berth, if not a division title in a wide open AFC North.
Yeah, you're right about that.
The Colts are a team I do not think will make the playoffs.
Yeah, and again, it's difficult to put too much on this because that can be a fallacy sometimes of saying, you know, I can't see thus and such. But I'm with you on this. It's a lot easier to imagine both teams at 3-2 than it is to imagine Ravens at 4-1.
And Colts 2-3. I mean, because to me, these teams, as the line indicates, are dead even.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have the home team laying 3, the odds makers are basically saying they're even. They are. So there's no edge here. Obviously, if you're a real sharp guy, you're going to want to toe the line here. Let me take a look here across the books. There are some 3.5s out there.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were to recommend anything, it would actually be Baltimore getting 3 in the hook.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm not on that.
All right. So there's that. And then the Battle of Texas is next up. The 3-1 Texans at the 3-1 Cowboys. Don't know that we'd have been saying that about the records for either team coming into the season. Ian Eagle, Dan Fouts, Jenny Dell on the call for this one. This is a game where Dallas started by laying 4. They're now laying 6.
And up to 7 in some places.
Yeah. And I have to say, and this is trademark USA Today Sports Weekly, Ryan Fitzpatrick here for the Houston Texans with 5 interceptions in his last 2 games.
Well, at least they didn't steal my Fitz hipster. Although I feel that's a little more obscure for the USA Today to be taking.
Yeah, they're not gonna steal anything quite like that from you.
That is a fantastic beard, though. I've got to say, I would. Can you imagine?
It's manly.
He's no
Daniel Bryan, but he is sort of at least Josh Reddick style.
Yes.
I would say so. You know, we'll slot him in there. This is a game where, again, because the regression has come with him, and it has been sharp, and I think it's only going to get worse from here, I have no doubt in my head whatsoever that I can't even believe I'm saying this, that Dallas will win this game and get the 4-1. What worries me at this point, though, is the way it got bet up to 6. All the value is gone in Houston.
You mean on Dallas?
All right, Dallas. I'm going to take Houston getting 6.
Oh, good, good,
because,
good,
again,
good. Take 7. It's available.
All right. Well, again, like I said, I have no doubt that Houston behind Ryan Fitzpatrick is not going to win this game. Although, again, you know, Romo against the Houston defense, obviously this could become a turnover fest to where Houston is in it despite themselves. We kind of saw that last week with Buffalo anyways. Might be a lot to ask for after 2 weeks in a row. Just don't think that Dallas is going to cover the 6. They're scaring me with that.
The first of, I think, what's going to be several plugs this week, but it's a weekly thing for 5 dimes. That's where you can get the 7. As always, I'm not paid by them at all. I'm just trying to help people out. I mean, obviously, online betting can be kind of scary.
Yes.
They are the highest rated book. Just so you know, I mean, I'm just, you know, I don't know anyone there. I've always noticed they have, you know, for the sharp players, they kind of have the best lines.
Right.
So you can get 7, but it's 6 everywhere else here. What do you say it's time for a recommendation here, Ricky?
Okay.
Because it is. I liked your breakdown of the game.
Okay.
The value is all on the dog now.
Yep.
This is based on Dallas winning a national TV game in shocking fashion against New Orleans.
You're telling me.
I mean, that was as good as they've looked in years. It seems that they've almost got everything figured out. Isn't that when it's time to go against the Cowboys?
Yep, pretty much.
Let's talk about Dallas. They have been a dog three times, only favored in that comeback game against St. Louis, and it was a slight favorite.
Right.
So, and they're 3-1 straight up, so they've clearly overachieved to this point. Right. But I think I've mentioned this on the show before to you. If not, it was to some random person, and I apologize.
On the street.
But it's been odd to me that through four games, the typically overvalued Cowboys have not been overvalued. Like I said, they've been a dog three times.
Yeah.
This would be the first time all year that they're what I would consider overvalued.
Okay.
The public's on them. The value's with the dog. Houston, in spite of Ryan Fitzpatrick, is going to keep winning. This is kind of the overachiever game. Remember we talked about who are the overachievers going to be?
Yeah.
We both thought Houston was going to win that division. So this is a game that they would steal.
Yes.
That, you know, kind of following suit there. I give Houston a chance to win this game outright.
Mm-hmm.
They have been a favorite in three games. They've won all three. They lost the game. They closed as a dog to the Giants. I just think that in the trenches, they match up well with Dallas. Remember, Dallas, who has maybe the best offensive line in the league, and they pushed around the Saints last Sunday night badly. They will not do that to J.J. Watt and company.
Right.
Houston's defense, maybe by making some turnovers against, you know, Tony Romo is certainly prone to those kind of games.
Right.
Houston gets the check mark here. My first of six recommendations this week. Take
all
Houston
right.
in the points.
And it's one that I wind up on as well. All right. And we move to the next one. It's the 1-2 Rams at the 3-1 Eagles. Five-time lounge guest Kenny Albert on the play-by-play with this one with Daryl Moose Johnston and Tony Siragusa. 1 o'clock Eastern time, Lincoln Financial Field on Fox. This is a game where the Eagles are laying 7. That's been a fairly consistent number pretty much through the course
few
of the week.
7.5s out there.
7.5s,
too.
Okay.
Peeking on my board, a few 7.5s. Most people are obviously afraid to move it off the key number.
Yeah, so a possible push situation as it's sitting on 7 right now. This is one where, again, I went back and forth on this a lot, and in theory, the Rams have what it takes with Zach Stacy with the 4.3 yards per carry to try to disrupt the rhythm of the Philadelphia offense, particularly because Philadelphia has been shockingly unable to establish the run.
Well, their offensive line. The offensive line issues have been huge.
They have been. They have been.
They have
and that's been
huge.
Part of it, too. But I'm looking at this, again, in terms of progression, regression, whatever. This is, I think, a low ebb for the season for the Philadelphia run game. I can't, you know, and while it might seem a little bit counterintuitive to say against that front seven of St. Louis it's going to get better, I think it is. Philadelphia on a rebound after last week. I like them laying the 7 at the link.
Eagles, 3-1. They have been favored twice and a dog twice, so that's slight. You know, they've. You would expect them to be 2-2 just by the line. They're 3-1, so they've overachieved.
Yeah.
But they are a shaky 3-1, aren't they, Rick Morris?
They are.
They are a shaky 3-1.
Yeah.
Trailed by double digits in each of their first three games, all wins. And then last week, you know, a good friend of ours, the little fella, texted me. He's like, I should have taken the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what a lucky team. He did it after they scored their third non-offensive touchdown.
By the way, FDH Lounge dignitary Chris Galloway, I was at his bye week bash on Sunday.
Yeah.
Dude had the Eagles defense special teams
and
his fantasy
football. That's a big
team.
Winner.
That's
that was
a career day.
But here's the thing. They didn't score an offensive touchdown last week. They didn't move the ball.
Right.
Until that last drive.
I started calling him Ruxin. I said, this is like an episode of the league.
Yeah, then he, very good. He didn't, but then they didn't move the ball until that last drive where they didn't even score. I think the Eagles are due to give some back here.
Okay.
Rams are off a bye.
Mm-hmm.
They've got, you know, that defensive line, which is underachieved a little bit.
Right.
To this point, but don't you think maybe they could contain an Eagles offensive line that's sort of in tatters? I know Lane Johnson's supposed to be back, right? His four-game suspension would be up, if I'm counting correctly. But the Rams are off a bye. They've, you know, they easily could be 2-1 had they not blown it against the Cowboys. They've only been favored the 1 week, and they got blown out by the Vikings in week one, excuse me, when they had the quarterback injury occur. And they've split the last 2 weeks as dogs.
Mm.
So you'd expect them to be 1-2. They are 1-2. I don't think they're going to win this game, but I think they keep it closer than the experts think. Give me the 7 on the hook where it's available.
Wow.
Second recommendation of the week, Rams.
Well, and again, when I'm saying that I think this is a week for McCoy and the running game to get healthy for Philadelphia, I'm expecting progression. Maybe this is a little bit of a maybe I'm being two-faced here when I say this, because St. Louis is due to get better in what I'm about to cite, but 155 yards per game they have yielded on the ground thus far. Now, granted, they have at this point in time gone up against the likes of Adrian Peterson back when he was still in the NFL. And DeMarco Murray, yeah, the non-person. For as much as he gets talked about these days, I guess you could say he's the Chris Benoit of the NFL. Maybe in more ways than one, actually. But again, that front seven of St. Louis hasn't shown up yet really to stop the run. I don't think this is the week that they start against LeSean McCoy. That's where I differ with you.
Gotcha. I just think off the bye, you know, the Eagles are kind of a phony 3-1. And remember,
yeah,
I said the Eagles would not win this division.
Yep.
There would be some regression.
Yep.
You know, maybe an outright loss could be in the cards here. Not going to bank on that, but I will take the points.
That wouldn't shock me the way that Philadelphia's season has gone. That would not shock me at all. All right, next up, we've got the Bucks at the Saints, the 1-3 Bucks at the 1-3 Saints. That is 1 o'clock Eastern Time Sunday, the Mercedes-Benz Superdome in New Orleans on
Fox.
Thank
you very much.
Yes, Dick Stockton, Kirk Morrison, and Christina Pink on the call for this one, as it happens. And the Saints are laying 12. This is down from, they're laying 10, down from 12 at the open. And again, big shockers on both sides last week as far as that goes. So with Tampa Bay winning outright at Pittsburgh, the Steelers, a glorious collapse at the end, as I give my editorial comment on that. And then the Saints just falling apart Sunday night and screwing me by not bothering to show up for that game on the pick that I made for them. I go back and forth on this one. What I'm looking at right now, it's going to make me say, lay the 10 points. The Saints at this point in time, and I will credit USA Today Sports Weekly for this insight, they have one takeaway to this point in the season, and they've been a disproportionately turnover-heavy team the last couple of years. That's been it.
How horrible has Jarius Byrd been, by the way?
Yeah, he's really underachieved. I mean, this Saints defense has been nowhere near what it was supposed to be coming into this year. I look at something like that, and again, this is one of these things where we always say that, you know, turnovers, yeah, it's kind of an unscientific thing. You look at that, you can't really put too much on it. But the Saints are way behind where they should be in terms of that. And a young quarterback in Mike Glennon coming in on a high after last week. You know, we were kind of reading the biorhythms correctly, I thought, with Tampa Bay going into Pittsburgh.
Didn't think they'd win outright, but loved them plus the points.
Yeah, exactly. And I say this week they could be due for their own letdown in the Dome in an absolute must-win game for the Saints. I'm not comfortable with it, but I'll lay the 10 anyways.
Whereas Green Bay, I am not too concerned about their 2-2 start and how it will impact an impending playoff run. I'm starting to get a little nervous about New Orleans.
Big difference between 1-3 and 2-2.
Especially because we talked about Green Bay had actually been a dog in two of their four games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two division road games. They had to go up to Seattle as well.
Mm-hmm.
So 2-2 is not that horrible. New Orleans has been favored in all four of their games, and they're only 1-3.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of possibly the most I think it's fair to say that New Orleans is the most disappointing team through the first quarter of the season. Now, they were a road favorite in three of those four games.
Okay.
It just goes to show. We talked about this earlier when we broke down the Atlanta game.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the NFC South is just going to be decided by who can win a couple road games between Atlanta and New Orleans. Now, I'm not playing this game because, first of all, it is astounding to me that these teams have the same record. Tampa Bay opening the year with back-to-back losses to backup quarterbacks, Derek Anderson and Austin Davis. And they get humiliated by Atlanta on Thursday night.
Yep.
They come back, do upset Pittsburgh. So there's kind of a natural letdown there. By the way, Tampa Bay was favored in its first two games. They've been a dog in the last two. So, you know, at 1-3, that's kind of disappointing anyway. I cannot make a case either way.
Okay.
A double-digit division favorite is just not something I'm interested in, but playing against New Orleans in New Orleans is also something I'm not interested in. Survivor pool, if you haven't used the Saints yet, I would say this is the time to do it.
Yeah, because there's a big difference between saying they're going to win and they're going to cover the 10. I would agree with that. Next up here, it's a Rust Belt battle. It is the 2-2 Bills at the 3-1 Lions, 1 o'clock Eastern time, Ford Field on Fox. On Sunday, it is past lounge guest Sam Rosen, along with Rondé Barber and Jennifer Hale on the call. For this one, this is a game where Detroit is laying 7, and it's been a pretty consistent 7 going through the week here. And again, This battle, this is another one where I went back and forth on because of the size of the number. In the end, Buffalo going with Kyle Orton, that's a panic move right now. Just a flat-out panic move.
I'll be going off about that momentarily.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Completely unjustifiable because, again...
I'll tell you what the justification is.
All right. Well, okay. I'm just going to wrap up my thing here by saying the Kyle Orton thing is scaring me off of Buffalo. I would otherwise probably pick them to get under the number, but this looks like a team where the wheels are coming off. A panic move after last week in Houston. I'm going to say Detroit to cover the 7. Now, what are your thoughts on the quarterback situation?
Long term, it is a disastrous move.
Yes.
It is really, really short-sighted.
Manuel is your guy that you're growing. It's a panic move.
Let's talk about Buffalo, shall we?
Yeah.
Let's go back to the preseason. What I predicted, this team would be a wild card team.
Mm-hmm.
They opened 2-0. I looked pretty smart, didn't I?
Yeah.
Went into Chicago and won, and then they really hammered Miami. They have since lost 2 in a row to San Diego, who's a good team, and then Houston, a game which, admittedly, E.J. Manuel did not play well. The pick 6 is obviously, you know, was the huge turning point in the game.
Right.
But why did I pick Buffalo to make the playoffs, Rick Morris? What was part of the reason? I'm going to tell you what part of the reason was.
Mm-hmm.
This team is all in on making the playoffs this year.
They are.
With the Sammy Watkins deal, new ownership, they, not that other teams don't want to make the playoffs, but when you look at the recent history of Buffalo, they've got the longest playoff drought. They haven't made it since 99 when they lost the Music City Miracle.
Mm-hmm.
More so than any of these other fringe teams, they will do anything. They will do any sort of they will make a lot of short-sighted moves so that they can just be playoff teams.
Right.
And that's what Kyle Orton is. It's ironic that Kyle Orton was kind of on the flip side of something previously in Denver.
Yeah.
I believe that was the first year I did the show with you.
Yes.
It may not even been every week, but we did it regularly, where I defended Tim Tebow starting over Kyle Orton all year that year. I just thought Kyle Orton is who he is. You had to go with the higher variance quarterback. And it brought Denver a drastically overachieving season. And then Denver did the very smart thing by jettisoning Tebow and bringing in Peyton Manning.
Yeah. To paraphrase Roddy Piper, if Kyle Orton is your answer, you're not asking the right question.
Yeah. Now, the question here is, can Kyle Orton get this team to the playoffs?
No.
I don't think he can. Although the AFC East, due to the what appears to be impending decline of the New England Patriots, may be a little more wide open than we thought.
Right.
Buffalo, 2-2. They shouldn't be. Here's what's frustrating. They're 2-2. They shouldn't be that upset about it. I would have expected them to be 2-2 at this point in the season. Here's the thing, and I'm going to recommend them plus the points this week. By the way, you can get 9 at 5 dimes.
Wow.
Here's why. Let's say, they've made the move to Orton. Let's say this week goes terrible for them and that they get blown out. Mm-hmm. Don't cover. What in God's name happens next? This was a team that was 2-0, and in the blink of an eye is now 2-3, and Doug Marrone's on the hot seat, new ownership. I just think Buffalo, I'm not picking him to win. By the way, I should probably mention that Detroit is really good this year.
Right.
But I just...
Especially at Ford Field.
Yes. I just see Buffalo hanging around, maybe a backdoor man situation. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just test Detroit. Detroit has really impressed me the last 2 weeks by sweeping a pair of games that I would not have thought they would swept. Beat Green Bay at home, went to the Jets last week and really controlled that game. We talked about the old Lions, the Jim Schwartz Lions, probably would have lost that game last week at the Jets in a letdown spot.
I would admit that, yes.
They're 3-1. They have been favored only twice, so there's been slight overachievement. Detroit's a team I'm kind of liking a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I just think that I can, if Buffalo were to get blown out here, it would just be so awful. It would just be a disaster of epic proportions. They're at least going to keep this one close. Give me the points with Buffalo, although I don't feel good about it.
One thing about both teams here, they've both been among the very, very best in the league against the run. Bills giving up 71.5 yards per game. It's 80.8 yards per game for Detroit. Having said that, there's a tendency to lump both of them in terms of being teams that have, if not great, above average 1-2 punches. I'm here to tell you, and again, and I'm a frustrated C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson fantasy owner, but give me the Buffalo combo over the Detroit combo. If for no other reason, then, you talk about hipster guys in this league. Is there a bigger hipster pick out there in fantasy the last couple of years? You want to punch in the face the self-congratulatory douche at your draft who gets Doik Bell. I got the guy that's getting the real action in Detroit. Yeah, 3.2 yards per carry. Congratulations on that. Doik Bell, biggest hipster pick in fantasy probably the last 2 years.
Detroit has not run the ball for more than 115 yards in any game this season.
Yeah.
Three three of the games that have been at 88 yards or less, and that 115 was against Green Bay, who's got the worst run defense in the league.
And this one ain't going to be the breakout against Buffalo.
No, it won't. That's the thing. I think Buffalo just kind of muddles it up and keeps this one close. Look, I'll say this. Best case scenario, Buffalo makes the playoffs with Kyle Orton. You threw away E.J. Manuel's career, so basically you can play one playoff. That's the end result here. Because remember, why is Buffalo so desperate? I should probably expound on that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a first-round draft pick next year
yeah.
because the Watkins trade.
Yeah.
This is a team who has decided to forsake the long-term for the short-term. I can understand why. They have not made the playoffs since 99. But
a classic, it's not my problem scenario. Of course, the Buffalo GM and the Buffalo coach don't worry about what happens next year with new ownership.
No, because with new ownership, they're obviously desperate for their jobs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can't fault them, but I mean, anyone who thought Buffalo was on the start of, you know, something good long term, no way.
Well, I think we could say the same thing about the home team in the next game here, looking at how they have gone the last 2 weeks after starting 2-0 as well. It's the 2-2 Bears at the 2-2 Panthers. 1 o'clock Sunday from Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte. Tom Brenneman, David Deal, and the lovely tanned Laura Oakman on the call for this one on Fox Television. This is a game where the line on this one has been the Bears getting a field goal. It opened at 2.5, so it's been pretty steady right about in there. That is a line that I think reflects a reality that I don't agree with at this point in time, and that is that there is probably a parity between these teams, if not Carolina still in the minds of some being better than Bears.
I like where your head's at here.
I don't subscribe to that.
I don't either.
Chicago is the better team. They're getting points. Yes, they're on the road, but the real Panthers, it would be extreme to say, because again, they really got their asses kicked the last 2 weeks. It's extreme to say that that's the real Panthers as opposed to the first 2 weeks.
They really did get their ass kicked, didn't they?
They
have looked bad.
They did. But compared to a team that laid the wood to Detroit at home in week two, I will say this is closer to the real Panthers. I will say that. And it's a situation where I think a team that has given up 140.8 yards per game on the ground against Matt Forte. Ruh-roh.
Little skewed, though, by the one game against Pittsburgh.
Yes, true. But give me the Bears in this one getting the points on the road, getting the three.
I'd love to join you, but one of the reasons I'm talking about how teams have performed relative to the points spread through 4 weeks is so I can take that information and kind of make a decision. Do I downgrade? Do I upgrade this team based on that from what I thought of them in the preseason? I already told you. You know, towards the beginning of the show, I've kind of upgraded Baltimore a little bit. Chicago is a team that I'm downgrading a little bit. I thought they would be a playoff team this year.
Still could be.
Yeah, but I'm thinking less and less about that. They, with all the injuries, they just reek of an 8-8 campaign. Now, they have been a dog each of the last 3 weeks and won twice, both times on the road, where they are this week, beat the 49ers, had them, beat the Jets, had them. Last week, I went against them. As they hosted Green Bay. So nice 3-for-3 the last 3 weeks on Bears games. That's nice. They, of course, opened the year with an outright loss at home against the Bills. So 2-0 on the road, 0-2 at home. Kind of a tough team to figure out. Real Jekyll and Hyde situation. Panthers, they're 2-2. They've been favored 2 weeks, underdog 2 weeks. They started 2-0. They're now 2-2. I just think with the kind of up and down that we see in this league from week to week, Carolina cannot possibly be as bad as they've been the last two games. So they might be due for a bounce back. And all the injuries to the Bears on the defensive side of the ball, can't recommend them.
Okay.
So when this line first came out, I was totally on board with you. Better team getting points, especially given what I thought in the preseason. I have some pause here.
Okay. All right. I can't blame you with the way that you laid it out there. Next up, it is the 2-2 Steelers at the 0-4 Jags. Spiro Dedis and Solomon Wilcots on the call on CBS.
The
Sunday,
G team for CBS.
1 o'clock Eastern time from Everbank Field. This is a game where the old Squealers are laying 6. It had been 7 at the open. It has come down steadily here a little bit. So 6 points, which is just
still
shy.
Yeah, still some says, still one, a couple sevens hanging out there, a couple lonely sevens.
Now here's the thing. 6 times 4 is, of course, my rudimentary grasp of math tells me 24.
It is.
So we are a half point off of the average that Jacksonville has lost by per game. They've lost by an average of 23.5 points a game through 4 games
this season.
It is not good.
Similar to last year.
I have picked Jacksonville the last 2 weeks, I believe, to get the backdoor cover.
I've recommended them the last 2 weeks.
Well, I, for one, am not going to make it three in a row because Pittsburgh, we talked about this again. Everybody's got their, you know, smoke blunts before kickoff games here. Pittsburgh
that doesn't exist. What have I told you? Teams are just a lot closer now.
The NBAification of the
NFL. Stop it. That doesn't exist. Teams are closer.
People
wanting to believe this team is way better than that team and they should kill them just doesn't exist.
Pittsburgh.
Road favorite Ricky.
Pittsburgh is a road favorite in this game.
Oh, good God almighty.
It's not a recommendation. Hold your horses, but.
I don't have any horses.
Again, you know, they got that sloppy game out of their system last week against Tampa. I think they're going to be out for blood against what has been a defenseless Jacksonville team through four games. I cannot do anything other than, say, take the Squealers laying the six.
Jacksonville's 0-4. They have been a dog in all four games. They have not covered any of those four games. They are obviously the worst team in the league. Pittsburgh.
The Oakland Raiders might say hi, by the way.
Jacksonville's worse than Oakland. Not by a lot, but they've been worse. Pittsburgh, 2-2. Favored twice. A dog twice. They've split the two that they were favored. They've split the two they were a dog. So they're kind of in that middle of those up and down, what's a large group of up and down teams, while Jacksonville's at the bottom. I don't care. Sheer principle, I'm doing it again. Jacksonville's a recommendation.
Wow.
I'm going down off the ship. Look, they were responsible for the majority of my losses, I think, during the first 7 weeks last year, whatever many was, until they finally got that ridiculous number against Denver and they covered. Eventually, they've got to cover, don't they?
This is going to be the big balls cover of the year if you hit this.
And it is scary because Pittsburgh laid an egg. But I just told you about how I'm kind of punting on Chicago over the NFC, a team that I predicted to make the playoffs before the year. Mm-hmm. Kind of feeling the same way about Pittsburgh, a team that is being compared to the recent Dallas Cowboy teams. That's never good, although ironically, Dallas is better this year.
I mean, you know.
This team is just. They're just an 8-8 season waiting to happen, Pittsburgh.
As much as I loathe the urine-covered towel and everything that goes with that franchise, I have to say, in fairness, in the AFC, we're going to start ruling teams out.
I'm not going to rule them out, but I've downgraded them.
Okay.
They'd win the division before the year.
The AFC blows chunks, you know.
It does. So. I mean, I said they'd win the division before the year. I'm kind of coming off that.
Well, yeah. Starting to
Cincinnati and Baltimore both are better.
Have looked way better, definitely. No question about that.